Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins, and it's great to have your company. Just before we begin what is a magic episode, a very special thank you to my new Patreon sponsors this week, Jennifer and Teresa. You can sponsor the podcast to help keep the show on the road by visiting patreon.com/Dan Mullins. This is a podcast about El Camino de Santiago, a series of pilgrimages across Europe. When people ask me to describe the Camino, I tell them it's an ancient tradition. Pagans walked the paths of the Camino to walk to the end of the world, a place called Finisterre on the west coast of Spain. They believed it was the end of the earth. The most popular Camino is what's called the Camino Francés. It winds its way from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port on the French side of the Pyrenees, across the Alps, through Pamplona and Burgos and León, and eventually to Santiago de Compostela, where the remains of Christ's apostle St. James are interred beneath a majestic cathedral towering over the town square. Pilgrims come from all over the world to walk the Camino for a wide range of reasons and many and varied inspirations. I received a great quote from one of my listeners this week, Amy in Dunleary in Ireland. It's from Walt Disney, the American animator, film producer and entrepreneur. See, Amy is preparing to walk her second Camino, but had stopped her regular walks because of COVID, and she wasn't sure she'd be able to reach the necessary fitness to get back into shape for the Camino. And her daughter found this quote to inspire her mum. Walt Disney said the way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. It's a quote that not only got Amy walking again, it got me thinking. The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. It could be applied to so many aspects of our lives, our collective journey. The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. We waste so much energy talking, proposing, planning, suggesting, and then once we begin, we get the momentum we need to progress. It could be relationships or career or health or travel or something many see as a big moment in their life, perhaps learning a musical instrument or a new language. The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. Start, and your future begins now. Good luck, Amy. I know you're listening. The pilgrim community around the world wishes you well. Buen Camino. Well, now to this week's magic episode. I have two guests this week, James Sage and his son Leo. James and Leo walked the Camino together earlier this year, and it was their second Camino. And the Camino has brought them peace individually and as a father and son. James and Leo, welcome pilgrims.
Hey Dan, we're so pleased to be here.
James, I'll start with you. How did the Camino come into your life?
I first learned about the Camino in the early 1990s. I was doing what is now called the gap year for Australian kids. And I was studying art in Florence, and I was sharing a dormitory with some students from around the world who were there to study university. And everybody was comparing their countries, and we had three Spaniards in the mix, and there were three things that the Spaniards loved to talk about. One was their football or their soccer. One was Julio Iglesias. And the third was this thing called the Camino. And they were very passionate about it. And it sounded amazing, but as a 17-year-old, it also sounded slightly crazy. Because, of course, everything we were doing then was sort of determined on how little we had distance we had to walk rather than how far. So so it sounded amazing, but I just wrote it off as something that crazy people did. And then in a story which I know many would be familiar with, I was lying on the couch 30 years later after a hard day at work, and It was late in the evening, and a movie started on the television, The Way. And I thought, I haven't heard of this, but Martin Sheen is a personal favourite of mine. So I thought I'd stick around and see how it rolled out. And sure enough, 2 hours later, as the credits rolled, I was hooked. And it absolutely resonated with me at that stage, because by then I was, you know, happily married, but I had all the complexity of modern life wrapped around me. I was running my own company and had a mortgage and looking at, had two kids, and the idea of just having space and time and doing a long physical walk just immediately resonated. So that's where it all started, and it took me a few years to get myself together to plan to go on the Camino, and I was due to go in 2018, but a couple of things intervened in life. So 2019 was my target year to go on my first Camino.
James, I'll stay with you. Let's go to 2019 then, your first Camino. You're preparing to walk. And then Leo's life became your focus at the time.
Very much so. Yeah, so Leo, I was, as you say, late 2018. I was due to head off in early 2019, but my lovely son Leo was really struggling with a few challenges in life at that time. A few years earlier, he had been diagnosed with OCD and anxiety, and that had escalated into a form where he was very incredibly anxious, and was really worried in particular about the safety, or how safe the world was as a place. And he was always checking in with people around him as to whether he was safe and whether the places he was going were safe. And in the schoolyard, that didn't really get understood very well by his fellow classmates, and he was sort of pegged as being a bit unusual, and that led to some pretty harsh bullying. And that escalated to the point where Leo started self-harming. And so in late 2018, my wife Jenny and I thought the help that we're giving Leo is not enough. We need to do something more drastic. So we did two things. We shifted schools, because school had become a place that was just a terrible place in Leo's mind. And I thought, why don't I take him on the Camino? I mean, it'd be a wonderful circuit breaker, but I was also thinking, here's a place where every day is uncertain, and yet where wonderful things can happen. Mm-hmm. And so I was putting my faith in the Camino that I could show Leo that we could go to a place where, it would be the absolute worst case scenario for him in his anxiety, because he always liked to know everything about where he was going. And yet it was a place where that didn't mean the worst was going to happen. And so with very short notice, I asked Leo at the beginning of 2019, would you like to come with me on the Camino? And as he said to me afterwards, it didn't quite sound like a holiday, but it sounded like a great adventure, and thankfully he said yes. And in April, we departed together.
So, Leo, to you, do you remember that moment when you decided that you'd go?
Yes, it was a big decision for me, because I just moved schools and I was trying to settle down into new classmates, new classes. It took me a couple of days to decide that I wanted to go, and I thought about it and that it would be good for me to have a break from everything and just let go in a way. Mm. So a couple of days later, I said, sure, let's do it. And then we did it.
Yeah. And tell us, Leo, about walking day after day. You're on the Camino and it began to emerge to you. There was hope. There's a brighter side to life. What was that feeling like when things started to improve for you?
It felt very reassuring.
Yeah.
Of everything. I felt more safe and more confident about myself and the world. I thought that everything was going to be okay, and it was. And that helped me a lot with my mental health and everything.
I imagine before you went on the Camino with your dad, there were nights, Leo, when you would lie in bed and I know all about anxiety, and you lie there and it's as if there's no possible way that you can mend what troubles you.
Oh, definitely. Some nights I wouldn't get to bed till 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and this is when I was 11. So, I worried nonstop. I'd go upstairs, talk to my parents, and then I'd feel reassured, go back, and it'd just come back. And so I thought that maybe a change in environment would help, and it did.
And so you're walking the Camino. There are moments of joy. There are moments of discovery. We've done the Camino. There are people listening who've done the Camino, and they know about that joy and discovery on the way. Do you remember where you were, like which town or which little area where you thought to yourself, oh, I can feel I'm changing?
I think it was halfway through the Mazzetta.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Because of the barrenness of the environment, you it's just left down to body and mind. So there were some days I had breakdowns, some days I was lifted up, and I was thinking that this hadn't happened to me before, that I'm changing as a person, and that reassured me that everything was going to be okay.
I just think it's so fantastic. And I can hear in your voice that you are now, Leo, totally different person. And it must have been just a blessing, James, for you to go on this journey with your son, not only step by step, the crunching of the gravel under your feet, but the emerging of your son into a different person. This is not your old son. This is a new person walking beside you here.
Absolutely, Dan. I mean, it was, I would say it really became evident after we finished, but on so many levels, walking with Leo, I mean, he was 12 at the time. He was still more a boy than a man. He's obviously grown quite a bit now, but it was just such a wonderful experience to be walking with my son. And I think one of the things I really wanted to communicate to Leo was that everybody has hard times but can still have a good life. And I, as a father, it's not unusual to want to present to your children as somebody who can do everything, infallible, can protect them from the world, nothing is going to rattle you. But the reality is, on the Camino, I got quite rattled on a few occasions. I had my own, complexities. And for me, for example, the uncertainty of not being able to find accommodation, or I suffered very badly from blisters on that first journey, and was questioning whether I could finish the journey. And I thought it was really important to show Leo that even those who seem infallible can have a challenge or a difficulty or a bad day, and that is not the end of the world as well. So you don't have to always be an infallible person. And then walking with Leo as a young boy, the attention that Leo got from adults was absolutely amazing. The number of pilgrims who came over in tears saying, how wonderful it is that you're walking with your son. It's something that I had wished I had done with my father, or that I had done with my children. We had pilgrims coming over and saying, I'm going to get in touch with my kids in the UK and tell them to meet us in Lyon and walk the rest of the Camino with us. You've inspired us. But also, Leo was felt empowered to talk to adults. He really engaged with the other pilgrims because of the nature of the interactions on the Camino. So we'd roll into an albergue, and I'd be rolling out the sleeping bags on the bunks in the dormitory, and Leo would make a point of walking around the dormitory and go up to every pilgrim, and he'd say, "Hi, I'm Leo. I'm from Australia. If you don't mind me asking, why are you doing the Camino?" And I didn't see a single adult who didn't stop what they were doing, no matter how difficult the day had been, and engage with him and have a conversation. So all of these things, Leo was just continuing to evolve in front of my eyes. And then post Camino, I think everybody who knew Leo before and after, they would say the Camino was an absolute changing point in his life. And it absolutely gave him the foundation to turn his anxiety around and become more positive and confident.
Leo, how does the Camino manifest in your day-to-day life now? How can you feel it in your spirit today, for instance?
I think since I got back from both, it's changed me a lot mentally and physically. Firstly, having a tan in the middle of the winter is always fun. I think it's given me more confidence and allowed me to be more myself without letting other people get to me.
Yeah.
I go to wherever I go out, and I just think that I can do whatever I want when I put my mind to it, and that life is safe and the world isn't a bad place after all.
Wow. Wow. It's just fantastic. And the most remarkable part of this story really is, to all of my listeners, that's just the first half of Leo and James's story. So before we get to the next half, I just want to close off the 2019 chapter, if you like, by asking you, James, first of all, you, what's one word you would use to describe the Camino?
I'd probably say peace.
Mm.
I would say that it's a place where I feel at peace. But I think it's also a place where, speaking personally, I found positivity as well.
Yeah.
So for me, it's where I go. I associate the Camino with peace.
Leo, what about you? One word.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to sum up a whole 800 kilometers and 6 week experience in one word, but I think that everything there was life-changing and astonishing. It was a great experience that I think changed both of our lives for the better.
Fantastic. Wow. So that's 2019. Now, James, let's fast forward to COVID, which impacted so much on all of our lives, indeed still impacts us today. And you wrote to me to say you were due to return to the Camino in 2020, but COVID intervened and you developed depression. Take us through that journey.
In 2020, I was due to take my daughter. My experience with Leo having been so amazing, and COVID intervened, as everyone knows. So I was running an architectural practice, and it was a very uncertain environment for being an architect, at least initially, until we knew what COVID meant. My wife's business was also very heavily affected by COVID, and it elevated the uncertainty of the world for me. And I guess it's in my nature to try and be prepared for everything. And so I was spending a lot of emotional energy trying to work out what if, because I have 25 staff. I certainly, yes. They're all family members to me, in effect.
Yeah.
And so by the end of 2021, I just found that I was not able to function anymore. And I went to my doctor, and he said, well, you've got depression and anxiety, it looks like, you've burnt yourself out worrying about everything. Fortunately, most of the things I worried about didn't come to pass. And he said, look, either you take some time off or I'll make you. And I thought, well, that really there's only one place that I really want to go to find that peace, to use that word again. And it was, of course, the Camino was just starting to open up again. And I thought, I'll tough this out. I let my work colleagues and my business partner know that I was suffering, and they were very understanding. I worked a sort of light load, if you like, until March, which was as early as I could get onto the Camino. And at that stage, I thought, right, I'm definitely going to return. And I started examining how I was going to feel about walking the Camino again, because it was evident that most of the routes were not fully open, and that there was a risk of not finding places open. So the Frances was the logical choice to walk. And I immediately concluded that I was just so emotionally fragile that I was going to spend the entire time crying, particularly when I walked around every corner and saw a cafe where Leo and I would have stopped or where we'd had a hard time. And I almost didn't think that I would be able to bear the experience of walking it by myself. And so I thought I'd ask Leo to join me again. And that, when I thought about that, I thought about it again as a parent as well. And I thought, you know, not only would I enjoy Leo's company and take comfort from it, but what an amazing experience for me to watch Leo do it again and see his reaction to what 12-year-old Leo had been able to achieve, and also to walk through places where we really had some very tough days. I mean, there was a time on the Roman Road where I literally carried Leo in his pack because he couldn't walk any further.
Yeah.
And I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful as a parent to just watch what Leo has actually taken from the Camino in the last 3 years and do this again together? And so, yes, Camino 2021 came into being.
Fantastic.
Oh, 2022, I should say.
Yeah, that's right. April and May of this year, yeah.
That's right.
James, I just want to touch on the diagnosis. Were you relieved that the doctor was able to diagnose depression? Because it's a genuine illness, not unlike gallstones or arthritis. It impacts your entire being. Were you relieved when the doctor said, oh, you've got depression?
Yeah, yes, I was.
Because
it really is good to know that it's just not that you're just not functioning properly.
Yeah.
I mean, as an architect, I actually design facilities for people with mental illness, and my business does have some, I guess, higher awareness of the issues that surround it, and therefore I had greater understanding with my business partners and others. I thankfully didn't have that issue of going back to my workplace and being worried that I was going to be, you know, have a stigma. But it was certainly nice to put a label or get an understanding that what I was going through was not something that couldn't be defined, that there was a definite cause for why I wasn't functioning well.
So, Leo, take us back to the Camino in April, May of this year. How long did it take for the old dad to start to emerge once you stepped onto the Camino?
Well, it was on and off from when we stepped on the plane. There was deja vu moments. I think it started maybe at Burgos, maybe. And he was starting to lighten up, which I thought was a good thing because he had been so stressed recently. And then I saw that he was, let's say, putting his feet up when we started getting through tough times. He was always optimistic, and even when he got COVID, he was always on the bright side, making sure everything was okay, and making sure he was okay as well.
Yeah. So, James, tell us about that. You did get COVID. What are the logistics? What happened? Take us all through that, because I'm certain we could all learn a lesson from what you went through.
Yeah. Well, it was, of course, you know, COVID had shaped our world so much, and yet I was almost surprised when I got it.
Yeah.
For some reason, it was almost like it seemed that everybody was sort of coming back to Spain with this thought about traveling through a country of COVID with almost not getting it, because of course we were all armed with tests and vaccinations and things.
Yeah.
So we were in Burgos, and we were walking with another family unit, a mother and daughter from Germany, and Ruth, the mother, said to me, "Well, how about Leo walks with me, and you can have a little bit of walk time yourself today. And so they headed off. And I found as I was leaving Burgos that I was really feeling unwell. And I was, you know, I wasn't counting down the kilometres. I was counting down the steps. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be a real hard slog today. So we got to Pontanas, yeah. And I had a really bad night's sleep and continued on. You know, long story short, we got to Castellari and I had a really bad night's sleep and it suddenly occurred to me, I didn't even think it until then, that I should do a test. So I did a RAT test, and sure enough, the glowing pink line came up straight away. It was a very strong positive, and I thought, wow, what do I do now? So it took me a long time to find out what the Spanish requirements were, and I have to say my Australian insurance company wasn't very helpful. And there's the 112 helpline in Spain or through Europe, and I got this most amazing operator who spoke English, and he said, "I'm going to get you help. I'll try and find the answer for you." And through a series of telephone calls, he ultimately arranged for the medical director of the whole of the Leon region to give me a call, with a translator to effectively talk me through what I needed to do. And what I needed to do was, at that stage, the Spaniards were not isolating unless you needed to be hospitalized. So I needed to wear a mask, and I needed to pretty much stay away from other people when I didn't have a mask. So what that meant in practice was that I was able to walk each day. It was a very cold Camino this time around. We rarely saw a day above 10 or 15 degrees for most of the journey.
Wow.
And when we got to a cafe, because, of course, everybody takes their masks off to eat, I would sit outside in the cold while everybody else was inside. And because the last thing, of course, you want to do is transmit this to somebody else. Sure. And you certainly don't want to be a pariah on a journey. And at a practical level, we needed to find a single room accommodation at all the albergues, which in the middle of the Meseta is not quite as easy as you would think. And what we did find was that there were some other pilgrims who were very worried about catching COVID. In fact, the Americans, of which there were quite a few this year, needed to have a negative PCR test to actually get back into their own country. So they were very hypervigilant. And we actually found it was quite hard sometimes to actually get the single room accommodation needed to isolate. But we managed. And by the time we were nearing Leon, I'd done my time. I was showing a negative test. So as an experience, one or two really hard days. I did take a day off in Castellari to just make my way, work my way through the headache and the day of discomfort that comes. But ultimately, the call of the Camino is very strong, regardless of whether you're well or whether you're unwell. And the thought of lying in my bed whilst imagining our Camino family continuing to move forward around us was almost unbearable. So I'd rather walk up the hill that follows Castellari with, you know, stuff coming out of every hole of my head and enjoying the journey than lying in bed and imagining it. So it was, and of course Spain has been very heavily affected by COVID, and there's a great deal of understanding and help around it as well. So it was not a country where I was worried about being, you know, somebody that everybody was going to be afraid of or be ostracized as a result of it.
Wow. So there you go. That's COVID. You're the first person I've interviewed actually who's had COVID on the Camino. So that's really interesting, James. Leo, I want to talk to you. You used this second Camino with your dad as a way to pay it forward, to raise funds for a very important cause. Tell us about that.
Well, Dad and I decided when we found out we were going on our second Camino, we decided that it'd be a great idea to raise some money for kids with mental health. And because I got all my mental health during primary school, and primary school wasn't a great time, as my dad mentioned, self-harm, worrying.
Yeah.
We decided to go with a fundraiser called Breakthrough. They had this program called Big Talks with Little People, where they teach kids about opening up to each other, and it's a non-judgmental environment. So we had meetings with them, and we decided that was what we were going to do. So we started a website and with a fundraiser with links to our blog, and along the journey we told people about the fundraising we were doing. So many people donated, not just from home, but also people on the Camino. I remember we were telling this couple at an airport, and they were from England, and they had no idea what the Camino was. But one day I was looking at the logs for the donations, and I saw their names pop up and saying, "Wonderful to meet you." So it's not just people who are interested in the Camino. It's just people who wanted to help kids with mental health donated.
How wonderful. Good on you. That's fantastic. Leo, when your dad wrote to me to tell me your story, he said, and I'll quote him, "Leo has been given a gift by the Camino and wanted to use his journey to gift and help others with similar afflictions." So is that how you see the Camino, Leo, as a gift?
Definitely, Dan. My mental health improved on the first one, and I realized that it was harder for me before the Camino to open up and tell people about my mental health.
Yeah.
And then after, I realized that I could tell people, and it's not like taboo as people think it is. I told my friends and they were understanding of it. So I looked back just before I went on this Camino, I looked back on how I felt before the Camino and how I felt alone, and I couldn't tell anyone, and I thought the world was against me. So I realized that lots of people must feel that way. So I decided to raise money and raise awareness so people could realize that it's okay to have mental illnesses and not be perfect. It's okay to be judged by people, but you just shouldn't let that get to you. And it's okay to open up about it.
The Camino may be your gift, but what you just said there is a gift to all of us, Leo. You must be so proud, James, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Because we have something in common, the three of us. My son, Riley, who's now 18, was a choral scholar at St. Mary's Cathedral in Sydney. So I know the commitment required from both students and parents when the son or daughter is in the choir. It's a lot of work. So, Leo, tell me about your musical journey.
Before I left for my first Camino, I was singing in as a soprano in a cathedral choir, which ranged from 15 to 20 hours a week of rehearsals and performances and services. And on my first Camino, I was known as the 12-year-old kid from Australia who sang Hallelujah all the way across Spain.
Fantastic.
So, this time, this Camino, just before I left, I was told that there were auditions for a musical while I was away for my school. And I was singing the rehearsal and audition requirement songs all the way across Spain, practicing and practicing, while I heard at home all my friends were talking about how they were going to get me a role in the musical. But it's not just, I don't think music it wasn't just because of the musical. I think music for me is a way to let go and express. So whenever I got to an albergue with a guitar, I sat down at the table with a couple of friends from Germany, America, and Denmark, and we just started to sing and everyone joined in, and the guitar was passed around for about an hour and we were all singing songs from our own countries and we were learning different languages of different songs. And I think it was a bonding moment for everyone, because even though we couldn't speak, I can't speak a lick of Spanish, but by the end of the night, I had learnt a verse of a song, which I've forgotten now. Yeah. But I think it's a way to, music brings people together.
Mm.
And that's definitely true for my experience on the Camino.
Well, tell me, Leo, about Rafaela.
Rafaela is a girl from Germany who I met on my first Camino. We had a language barrier when we were 11 and 12. So we sang songs we both knew.
Yeah.
And we just walked along and we met this man from Brazil called Leandro, and he had a Bluetooth speaker, so we were always playing music and singing all together. And that's one of the key memories I have. But on the second Camino, we met with Rafaela again, and my voice has broken about 2 times lower, 2 to 3 times lower. And it started from being the highest singer to the lowest singer in all my choirs. So we still sang all those songs, and it was funny to see how we've both changed in that time, both mentally, physically. And yeah, it was special to reunite with her after 3 years.
Yeah.
And sing those songs we sang 3 years ago, and we had such great memories, and it brought back good times from the last Camino.
James, tell us what you and the other pilgrims made of this unique international childhood friendship, and music being a key part of it.
Yeah, it was so Leo and Rafaela met at Orison on the first night. And we really were walking with a very traditional Camino family crowd, meaning, you know, 50 years plus in age typically. And there were these two youngsters who immediately gravitated towards each other. And as Leo mentioned, the language connection was not strong, because they didn't speak each other's languages. So music became the obvious connector. And so they spent a lot of time just walking next to each other. In fact, it was really nice walking behind them, because they literally just sort of, you know, bump into each other as they walked along and chatted, and you know, just sort of heads tilted towards each other and obviously connecting. And they were teaching each other songs. Alleluia was a bit of a favourite, and they really became known as a unit on the Camino by everybody, you know, the two young singing children who were always laughing, and they almost became known as an entity. And Rafaela and Ruth were only able to walk the first 2 weeks of the Camino, and by the time we got to Logroño, which is where they needed to depart, they really were so well known. And we got to the main square, and it was time to say goodbye. And we were, then Leo and Rafaela were in the middle of the square and moving in to give each other a hug. And I looked around and I could see that there were pilgrims at all the cafes around the square watching. And so many of them were actually tearing up that you know, this little connection was about to be lost. So it really was a special experience for everybody. And there were times when Leo and Rafaela would stop and sing at a cafe, you know, almost like an informal pop-up busking session. And everybody just loved the singing and gave them applause, and they even earned themselves a few euros to put towards their next chocolate bar. so it was very much, music was very much part of our journey for that that first time. And then if I can sort of mention the second chapter of that same journey.
Yeah, I was getting to that now. I was getting to that in a second, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So Leo and Raffaella stayed in touch, and one of the things that people kept saying to us on the Camino was, how is it that you can get Leo away from school for 6 weeks? And so many of them mentioned just how difficult and strict their own countries were in relation to children taking time off school. So I was really surprised when Ruth, who was Raffaella's mother, sent me a text saying, Raffaella is missing Leo terribly and missing the Camino terribly. Would you mind if we came and joined you again? And cutting a long story short, Ruth worked very hard with Raffaella's German school to get a few days off. And they came back to join us, and I didn't tell Leo. And it came to pass that we were finishing the day's walk from Soria to Porto Marin, and Ruth and Raffaella were waiting on the end of the bridge as we walked in. Porto Marin, and Leo, of course, was absolutely overjoyed that Raffaella had returned, and of course, I couldn't contain what was about to happen. I'd told many people what was going down that day, and as they came together and gave each other a big hug, there were cheers from all around. so they reconnected, and the next few days, as we walked into Santiago, the two of them were just, back together and singing again. And it was wonderful. It was just so nice to have this soundtrack to our journey of these two kids singing together.
That is just so fantastic. I love it. I absolutely love it. Leo, you met Emma on this last Camino, and I've got some audio of you singing in the cathedral at Puente de la Reina.
My mother told me someday I would ride galleys with good oars, sail to distant shores, stand up on the prow, noble bark I steer, steady course to the havens.
Leo, tell us about singing in cathedrals, in underpasses, in empty churches, in chapels. What's it like on the Camino, and the spirit of that music?
Well, it's mesmerizing because, in a way, it reminded me of home, but also reminded me that I was on this big journey. It reminded me of home because I was back harmonizing with a friend. Like, lots of my friends at school, they're high singers, and I harmonize with them, and we sing every lunchtime and have a fun time with music. And singing in cathedrals, I think, was a big part of this Camino for me, because firstly, you can hear the beauty of music resonating around you, bouncing off the walls. And it was kind of like a bonding moment when you sang with someone else and you were just clicking in that moment and just being while singing. And it was a really beautiful moment for me, especially in that cathedral.
I just love it so much. And I want you to tell us, Leo, I'll stay with you. Tell us about I Want to Know That the World is a Safe Place.
Yes, well, after my first Camino, Raffaella's mother, Ruth, she's in a band. Ruth plays guitar and cello, and she sings. Dad got this message one day of a audio file from Ruth, and captioned was, "Here's a song for Leo," and we listened to it, and we realized that Ruth had written a song about me and about my anxiety and knowing that the world's a safe place. And on that journey, trying to figure out who I am and what my purpose is as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful song. I'm going to play it at the end of the podcast. It's honestly, it's just breathtakingly beautiful. James, back to you. You and your wife decided to present Leo with a gift when he arrived in Santiago de Compostela.
Yes, we did. There's a little bit of a backstory. I guess one of the aspects of Leo's anxiety and OCD is that he becomes quite singularly focused on things. And on our first Camino, we're leaving Saint Jean Pied de Port, I bought him a little Camino pin, and that became the beginning of a long process of collecting Camino pins along the way of the journey. In fact, it became a great motivator for me to actually get Leo to the next town, because sometimes 12-year-olds need a little bit of motivation when they've got a big day ahead of them. And by the time we walked into San Diego, Leo had about a kilogram of metal around his neck. He'd collected so many pins. Wow. And he'd swapped them with people, and and people had actually bought them for him as well. So it was really unusual on the second Camino that Leo's tendency towards collecting things hadn't really come forward. And as he mentioned, he was trying out for a musical which actually had a guitar component to it as well, and he'd been playing guitar for some time and was really taking to it as an instrument. He'd tried a few instruments where you couldn't sing and play, and obviously singing is an important part of what he does, and yeah. So guitar was the instrument of choice, and we were in the land of guitars. And I rang Jenny and I said, we'll work out how to get it home, but why don't we gift Leo a guitar from Spain, something that he will always keep and always remember as part of this journey. And she thought that's a fantastic idea. Just purely by chance, we found ourselves walking with another father and son team, Grant and James. And Grant is a lawyer during the day, but his one passion is guitars, and he makes guitars.
Wow.
So as we were last week walking into Santiago, Leo and Grant were engaging in endless conversations on all things guitar, and Grant was talking about the virtues of different materials and styles of guitar. And long story short, we asked Grant, would you be willing to help Leo find a guitar in Santiago, which of course he was. And yeah. So it was just a wonderful little extension of our journey that the day after we arrived in Santiago together, the two of them went guitar shopping.
Well, and I'm going to interrupt you, James, because Leo, for the last 40 years, I've undertaken what I call guitar safaris, going in search of the perfect guitar. So a Saturday spent for me going from guitar shop to guitar shop to guitar shop to find the perfect guitar is one of the things I love doing more than anything. So I want to hear this from Leo, James, if you don't mind. Tell us about the guitar safari in Santiago de Compostela, Leo.
Well, that's where we're alike, Dan. I spend all my free time in music stores.
Yeah.
Well, we went to, I think, three guitar stores in Santiago. It was just outside the old city. We first went to this little store, which is where I ended up buying my guitar. And it had this, the man was went over to these two walls. He said, "Made in China, no good. Made in Spain, very good." So he sectioned us to the Spanish guitar area, and Grant and I spent half an hour plucking away at different guitars. So then we walked to another guitar shop, and as soon as we walked in, we knew we weren't going to buy something from here, because it was vintage Stratocasters that were 6-7,000 euros.
Right.
But Grant's son James and I were the same age. We just sat on the couch in awe of all the guitars and the amps and the pedals, and we just sat there imagining what it was like to play those guitars. But we just sat there and thought about everything about guitars. It was guitar heaven. And so we spent about 20 minutes there, and then we went back to the little guitar store, Spanish guitar store, and we came down to two options of these two guitars. And I closed my eyes and played each one and realized the one that I chose was the perfect Spanish guitar for me. It just resonated with me.
Yeah. Yeah. You can feel it in your body, can't you?
Definitely.
I love that feeling so much. That's so great. That is just so great. Oh, a guitar safari in Spain. Wow, how fantastic. Now I'm thinking about a guitar safari in Spain.
You should try it one day.
I think I will. All right, James, Leo's 15 now. He's heading into the next phase of his life. What are your hopes for him?
Well, my hopes for both my children are happiness. There's a saying that has resonated very much with my wife and I, which is, you're only as happy as your saddest child. And that's been very much the case for us as parents. I just hope that the happiness that Leo has found in the last 3 years continues on. I hope that he is not constrained as he was when he was a young boy by his mental illness, that he flourishes, and that the positive journey that he is now on continues. But happiness, it's for me, it's not about success or all those things that you have when you have a child who is nearing the end of high school and contemplating career choices. I'm happy if my children are happy, and that's what I wish for them and hope for them.
Fabulous. You're only as happy as your saddest child. Goodness, what an astonishing thing to say. Leo, your dad's been through such a difficult journey, but you've helped him lift himself up, helped him grow, and to see, like he did for you in 2019, that life is an adventure and there's so much joy and wonder ahead. What are your hopes for your father in this next phase of his life?
Well, he is still working very hard with the architecture business, and he seems to be enjoying it a lot, I think. But I hope that he's happy with his choices and happy with what he does in his spare time and just enjoying just being and
fantastic. Well, I just want to congratulate you both. It's not easy to talk about mental health. It's not easy to admit you're struggling. It's not easy to be open to change. It's not easy to be open as a father or open as a son. So congratulations for having the courage to take this journey together. Thanks, James, for getting in touch. I'm so pleased we've been able to share your remarkable story. And thanks, Leo. Keep walking, keep playing that guitar and singing songs. That is a most wonderful adventure, full of so much joy and wonder. Walk on, fellows, and buen camino.
Thank you, Dan, and buen camino to you too.
Buen camino.
My guests this week, father and son, James and Leo Sage. What a wonderful example of why we all love the Camino so much. There's a link in the show notes if you'd like to donate to Leo's campaign to raise awareness and funds for children suffering mental health issues. What a wonderful story. Thanks again to Amy from Ireland, who sent me this week's quote to keep us all walking on. Walt Disney said the way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. A very special thank you to my new Patreon sponsors this week, Jennifer and Teresa. Thank you for your kindness. You can sponsor the podcast too to help keep the show on the road by visiting patreon.com/Dan Mullins. Thanks for your company this week and every week. And don't forget, there are literally hundreds of episodes in the back catalogue to listen to. And to help us grow, if you know a friend who might be interested in the podcast, why not share it? I'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino.
Perfect weight on my shoulders, a bit of weight to lose, a long journey for us, I'm not sure if I can do. Dad, you tell me we'll be just fine, it will be life worth living. We have to trust what comes our way, and I can only hope to overcome, 'cause I wanna know that the world is a safe place. Dad, can you show me the way? Thoughts that are haunting my mind make me feel tight. Oh, how I want to be free. If taking care of everything, my feet and legs, back and head, you fought for free time and laid work aside to show what I mean to you. You say we only live now and once. I want to spend time with you. I've been longing for this so long. The bond between us two grows strong, and I wanna know that the world is a safe place. Dad, can you show me the way? Thoughts that are haunting me, I still don't feel it. Have to open my eyes, and there you are, right by my side. And you tell, always there for me. I say there are reasons to hate myself, and yet there are none. And you tell me that you love me. Thoughts that are haunting my mind make me feel tight. Oh, how I want to be free.